Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And whether you've lived in Wisconsin a couple of months or maybe your whole life, there are likely aspects of life here that stand out to you as special. And I think it's a real talent to be able to convey those feelings in a way that resonates with others as well. And I'm so glad to have you along today listening in as we visit with John Hildebrand. He teaches English at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. His most recent book is an absolutely wonderful collection of essays. It's called The Heart of Things, a Midwestern Almanac. And we are really pleased to have him along to talk about it. John, thank you so much for coming today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
And as you listen to John talk, I hope you'll think about what typifies life in Wisconsin for you. Is it the landscape or the people, the values? How do you feel about the way the Midwest is viewed from the outside? Are you just as happy that the joys of living here aren't as well known sometimes as some people would maybe like to have them well known? Maybe you live in a small town in Wisconsin. What are the joys that keep you here? All those are things you might think about as we visit with John. You can join in with your comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post your comment there, and we'll take a look at it. John, in your introduction to the Heart of Things, you talk about how the Midwest is viewed in movies and television and from the coasts. How would you describe that image?
Well, you know, it boils down to a few movies, both of which set their hero or heroine from Chippewa Falls. So you've got Jack Dawson, the Jack Dawson character in Titanic. He's from Chippewa Falls. Yeah. You've got Annie Hall from that movie. She's from Chippewa Falls. And I lived in Chippewa Falls for a time, and I didn't run into either of those people. But I think there's this sense of on the coast that we're all somehow kind of innocents.
Yeah.
This came home to me. One time I went to New York and went to a conference. And afterwards, we were in this very crowded hotel bar, and there were three of us, and we only had two chairs. So I went looking for a chair, and I came to a table, and everybody's dressed very smartly, as in fact was I. And I said, do you mind if I have this extra chair? And they all looked up at me, and then finally one of them spoke, and he said, "You're from the Midwest, aren't you?" And I said, "Why, yes. How did you know?" And he said, "Because you asked." And somehow taking the chair back, I felt somehow diminished that he felt he had my number. And I thought, I know this whole business of Midwestern nice gets bandied around about quite a bit, but we're as complicated as anybody. We can be mean. We're just shy about it. That's all.
And that's you write about that wonderfully in one of your chapters. What was the title of that chapter? I've forgotten.
That was called Native Son.
Native Son, yeah.
And it kind of set up this question about what do you think a Midwesterner is?
Yeah, and you actually you talk about a friend.
I did
in that chapter that kind of typified Midwest values for you. Did you?
Yeah, I mean you know if you were taking a poll and you wanted to say, well, what's a Midwesterner like? Well, he's somebody that loves the country and loves being in the country. Even if he lives in town, he likes to hunt. He likes to get out. He's a family man. Maybe he's a veteran. He tends to be a little taciturn. But when he talks, he's serious. But he's got this wonderful, understated sense of humor. And when I was writing the essay, a friend of mine had recently died. And I thought, this guy was every one of those things. And his name is Joby Zhang, and he grew up in northern Laos, and he didn't move to the Midwest until he was in high school. And to call him a native son would be to flatter ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. You bring out the Hmong presence in your book as well.
Well, partly it's because, we're kind of a diverse state. The one thing I always didn't like about regional writing was the sense that the Midwest was the time land forgot, Lake Wobegon, nothing ever changes. Well, things always change, and that's what makes it interesting. So there's a piece that I wrote about a outdoor wedding, and I'm at this wedding, and I had recently seen a revival of Thornton Wilder's play, Our Town. Hmm. And Act Two of Our Town, there's a wedding.
Yeah.
And it's, small town girl marries a small town guy, and they've known each other all their lives. And as I was watching the wedding, I thought, this could be an open-air production of Our Town, except the bride, who was a colleague of mine, was Hmong. And the groom, who was about a head taller than she was, wasn't. Yeah. And what I thought interesting is that, they had the ceremony in two languages. But when the bride asked, when she picked somebody to translate the English into Hmong, she picked somebody who wasn't Hmong. And she could have picked any of her relatives. But she, again, picked this real tall white guy. And I thought, what she's saying is, to all of us maybe, in a very subtle way, is, things change.
Yeah.
That's sort of what I, when I was writing this book, I had to keep my eye open. I had to pay attention.
Yeah.
And what I was interested in is kind of the two things. What's changed and what remains constant?
Mm.
And so it's sort of an interplay between those two things.
I liked your title, The Heart of Things. And you're sort of getting at that a little bit here. But maybe you could expand on or talk about how that came about for you.
Well, I just love the phrase. I ran across it in an essay by a former teacher of mine who was a poet named John Haynes, and he homesteaded up in Alaska. And actually, I went to graduate school in Alaska, and I built a cabin in Alaska and so forth. And in one of his essays, he writes, to live by a large river is to be kept in the heart of things. And I knew the river he meant, because I'd been to his cabin. It was a big, big, it was the Upper Tanana, I think it was, and, mountains all around. And it was, very imposing. And, I live by a big river. I live by the Chippewa River.
Yeah, it's a wonderful river.
And I think, maybe you don't need this kind of mythic landscape. Maybe you just need a river. Any river will do. And wherever you live, that's the heart of things, if you open up to it.
Yeah. John Hildebrand, our guest today, University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Professor of English, and just a wonderful, wonderful writer. And his latest book is The Heart of Things, A Midwestern Almanac. I really hope you have a chance to get it and read it. Marty in Milwaukee has a comment for you. By the way, if you'd like to join in, maybe you have a question or a comment. What do you like about Wisconsin? What typifies life in the state for you? 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Yes, John and Larry both. Thank you for taking the call, and what a wonderful subject. May I just first of all say I'm 62 years old, so the whole issue of retirement, especially where are you going to retire, has started to come up in my conversations with my wife and friends. And so that's made me think about all the criteria that go into making that decision, the weather, the taxes, possibilities for further education and activities. But for me, it's all boiled down to one simple thing, and that is the people. And for me, the people is in Wisconsin, here in Milwaukee and elsewhere, have been absolutely at the core of my love for this place. And it has to do specifically with the way people have stepped up, strangers have stepped up to help me in times when I've had a challenge, you know, stuck in the snow or trying to do some yard work with the wrong tool. And people just out of the blue come in and start to share what they have without any asking or without any expectation. And very quickly, I was 10 years old when we moved away from Wisconsin. I'm a native. But then I then spent the rest of my time, high school, college, grad school, and after that, trying to figure out a way to come back to Wisconsin. And I'm really, really happy to say I've been back here 25 years. And it's nothing else feels like home like this.
That's well put, Marty. Yeah. John, comments?
Well, I agree entirely. You know, the reason we stay in a place is not the scenery, although it helps to have pretty scenery. It's our connections with people. And I think, you put down roots in a place, and that's how you do it. You know, it's funny you're talking about retirement, but I think... the choice of where you live gets made pretty early. We're a pretty mobile society, and I remember driving my son off to college, and he was the last kid that I was doing this for, and so I kind of a mix of emotions. And when I dropped him at the dorm, I don't know what I told him. I probably said, you know, work hard and don't get in trouble. But what I thought about it, and what I should have said, and what I ended up writing in the essay was, trust your instincts. What seems worthwhile and true now shouldn't change overnight. And if home seems a little strange come Thanksgiving, it's because you never had to think of home as an idea before, as a choice, and now you do. And I guess one of the reasons I wrote this book was to explore why we choose to live here. You know, what's good about this place? And very often that's very simple things. And it's, again, it's people.
John Hildebrand, our guest today, author of The Heart of Things. I'm Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look today at Wisconsin, and through the eyes of John Hildebrand, who has written a wonderful book. It's called The Heart of Things, A Midwestern Almanac. And I hope you'll join in. I hope you'll think about what makes this state. Why do you like this state? What do you love about it? What are the people? What are the experiences that you have that make this a wonderful place to be? Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Rich in Rhinelander, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to say that Wisconsin and the Midwest seem special to me because it's not just the people who were born in the area. It's the people who choose to move into the area and live. There's a show on public television right now called Around the farm table with, I think her name is Inga Witcher.
Yes.
And to me, she encapsulates the Midwestern ideals of what matters, and the stuff that doesn't matter really doesn't matter. There's some kind of understanding of paradox in the Midwest, and you see this all the way back in literature with F. Scott Fitzgerald and This Side of Paradise in The Great Gatsby, where it's a very reflective population of people. I know he's from Minnesota, our rival, but he really explores, how greed and status-seeking can warp who we are as people. And there's a certain, even with high achievers in Wisconsin, I really think there's a certain rejection of superficialities that I've met poor people here and I've met extremely wealthy people, and I have to say that they really do focus more on the quality of of what you can offer or who you are than your background. And that goes along with the story about the Hmong and European-American wedding. I'll stop there, but I just think the program is wonderful because I love the Midwest. I really love the Midwest, and I love what we teach our kids about what matters in life.
John, Rich, thank you so much. I really hope you have a chance to read John's book. And, John, I know you'll have, you have a comment.
Well, I think I have a comment. You know, when I married, I married into a farm family, and my wife grew up on a farm, and she's a very, I think, beautiful but straightforward kind of person. And, you know, when I go down to the farm to help, you know, with chores and things like that, we think of that as you know, it's kind of the bedrock of the Midwest. But even there, you know, things change. I wrote a book a couple of years ago called Mapping the Farm about a farm family. And I look back in that book now and realize how much changed. You know, not so much the landscape, but, you know, people passed away and family dynamics changed. And so I, you know, I wrote a little piece in the book about putting up a corral fence.
Yeah, you can read that.
And it's about, and in some ways it's sort of about how things do change. And anyway, now that my father-in-law is gone, ownership of the farm is passed to his half-dozen grown children. In a sense, what we're operating here is a collective farm, and it gives you a real appreciation for why the Soviet Union failed. There's little personal incentive for working hard, and no end of criticism if you screw up. Farm meetings descend inevitably into family encounter sessions where everybody airs their grievances. Since nobody wants to act on his or own initiative for fear of doing something wrong, we're mainly in maintenance mode. A cousin rents the cropland and the pasturage. It's his cattle we're repairing the corral to hold. He's the real farmer.
And thank you again, Rich, for that call. I appreciate it. And that's a wonderful little piece. And I did want to comment on Inga Witcher. She's been, I've met her now several times. And just for Rich's benefit, she is. She's no different off the air. She's the same real person that that you see. What you see is what you get. That's what she's really that way.
Well, I loved. I've seen her show a couple of times, and I loved it. And one of the things I loved about it was that she doesn't make farming seem like a simple vacation from the real world.
No,
it's a complicated life. It involves a lot of different skills, and I appreciate the fact those skills are highlighted on that show.
Yeah. We have more callers online here. Jane in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share that one of the things, and I'm a native Wisconsinite and have lived in this area most of my life, and I think one of the things that I really love is that we are not big braggarts here. But not everyone else, especially on the coast, people on the coast don't necessarily see that as a positive. And that was brought home to me many years ago. I went to a work luncheon, and it was a very elegant luncheon, and a majority of people were from New York, the New York City area. And I was sitting next to a woman at the table, and we're having our lunch, and she turns to me and said, "That's a lovely blouse that you're wearing." And I said, "Thank you. It was a great deal. I got it on sale." And as the words were coming out of my mouth, I could see the look of horror on her face. Like, why would you tell anyone that? And I thought, I was expecting a high five, because if I was talking to a girlfriend, that's a victory.
Good for you.
And good for you, Jane.
She looked at me like I was offering her a recipe for roadkill casserole or something. It was, I couldn't believe it. But I think that's something that's very endearing about the people here.
Well, I think we're very thrift-minded, and some of it's generational. I know with my father-in-law on the farm, you know, he had grown up in the Depression, and he just would never buy anything new. Everything had to be, you know, salvaged from something else. So before we could begin a construction project, we had to, you know, tear something else down and pull the nails out. You know, sometimes he got kind of carried away.
Jane, thank you so much. I really appreciate your call. You know, Chris in Rice Lake, let's go there. Hi, Chris. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
And what's on your mind? Thanks a lot for calling.
Hi. I was just kind of wanted to mention that I moved up here to Wisconsin about a year ago, and I grew up in Northeast Ohio, but I went south for all of my education for my college and my master's degree, and so I spent about a decade in the South and Tennessee and in Georgia. And although the people were really nice, they always talk a lot about Southern hospitality, and I always just felt like an outsider down there. But my brother and I recently moved up here going after different jobs, and we just happened to both move to Rice Lake, or to Wisconsin. And when we were talking about how different Wisconsin is from the rest of the nation, I said to him at one point, I was like, you know, what's really weird is Wisconsin is what the South claims to be. And it's just everybody's really nice. You go to the grocery store, people have 10-minute conversations with you when they didn't know you when you walked in, and everyone will buy you a beer, get you dinner, just want to get to know you. And there's a real sense of hospitality of everybody's friends and family around here. And even if you didn't grow up here, you're still a part of it. Yeah. So I just really appreciate that and have very much enjoyed my year in Wisconsin and looking forward to many more.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you're in a real pretty area. Rice Lake's a pretty area.
Glad you like it.
Yeah, glad you like it. And I guess, well, I think, you know, we are pretty helpful. I mean, and I think most people want to be friendly.
I think we are friendly. I mean, one of the things that I did notice, a change, and it was just a change in the workplace where I work, but I think it's a change that other people have noticed, is the kind of loss of small talk. And I remember being in a cafe in Milwaukee down by Brady Street and just sitting there having breakfast and watching these old guys come in, mm-hmm. and they're just, you know, laughing, and I can tell they're not talking about anything. They're just making small talk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was younger, I worked on a assembly line, automobile assembly line, and we would take a break. And the way we'd spend the break, is other than drinking coffee and smoking, is people would just talk. They'd talk about anything, you know, the weather, the job. But it was a form of relaxation that kind of bonded people together. But what I noticed in my workplace, we have a coffee room. Hardly anybody goes there anymore. and they used to. They used to sit there, you know, with a cup of coffee and chatter, you know, for 15, 20 minutes. And I thought, why does this happen? You know, why does, you know, did everybody just stop drinking coffee? And I realized that it's the influence of the internet, that mm-hmm. people, instead of communicating face to face, they get on the internet, or they go on Facebook, or they email. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think technology can affect the way we behave. And I do love, you know, when I, you know, meet people who I don't know, that you can use small talk as just a way of finding common ground, even if you're just talking about the weather. Oh, hey, did you see the Packer game or mm-hmm. something? And it's a way of kind of establishing a connection with people.
Yeah, I had a colleague come from another state to Wisconsin, and he said the first thing that he really had to get to know, and he was not a football fan at all, but he had to get to know the Packers and understand the Packers, because if you were going to talk about anything on Monday in the fall season, it was the small talk was always around the Packers.
Yeah, and I mean, it's actually kind of fun, you know. And,
it is.
I started off. I hate to admit this, but I started off because my in-laws' farm is in Minnesota. Kind of a Viking fan. This is back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would, when Favre came in, I switched over and, you know, became kind of a rabid Packer fan. But, you know, it's a big mistake, I realized, to visit the in-laws when there is, you know, a Packer-Viking game. Feelings get hurt. There's a lot of emotions riding on that. Many an occasion has been ruined because of the football game.
Oh, man. Luke in Evansville, Indiana. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, John. I'm a Wisconsin native, but I moved to Evansville, Indiana about 5 months ago. And that's only 5 miles. I only live 5 miles away from the Kentucky border. And one thing I noticed is that the Midwest has a pride of being the Midwest. I once mentioned when I was moving to this thing, I was moving to the South. And I was told to think, no, this is not the South. This is the North. So there's definitely a sense of Northern pride, even though you go down there and it sounds like the South.
Well, I think you're right, but it doesn't get as obnoxious as the Southern pride can be. You know, sometimes you just get sick and tired of hearing about the South and, you know, the Civil War and so forth. I've lived different places. 35 years ago or so, I moved to Wisconsin. But before that, you know, I lived in California. I lived in Alaska. And particularly in Alaska, where so many people... they're not native to the place. They move there. They just never stop talking about place. You know, oh, here we are in Alaska, and they'd name their dog after a native village or something like that, and they just go on and on and on. And it was refreshing after having spent 5 years in Fairbanks to move to Wisconsin, where people didn't constantly talk about it. Oh, look, isn't it wonderful where we live? You know? And maybe that opened the door for me to do that in the book, because there hadn't been that much of it.
You have a fun, I mean, language has kind of come in to the conversation more than once here, and how we speak, and you've got a wonderful... Oh, no. Was it your dad or your father?
It was my father.
It was your father. And I'm hearing those words. And those are words I used or my dad used for sure.
Well, hanging around at the farm, I would hear these expressions. And I thought, where do they come from? So my father-in-law would sit down and he'd read the... newspaper, and he always called the obituary page the Irish Sporting News. And I thought, where that came from. And if there was trouble brewing, he said, "Well, I'm going to put the kibosh on that." And I thought, what's the kibosh? You know. And he had one expression that I thought was very funny. If things went really bad, I mean, he'd say, "Christo Friday." And I thought, what?
Where did that come from?
Where did that come from? And I think that, I get into this in the essay, I get into a question of whether our idioms are based in place or in time. And I think it's maybe evenly split. Mm. You know, one of the things he used to say, if the kids were misbehaving, he'd say, "You better straighten up and fly right."
I thought many a time myself as a kid.
he'd been a pilot in the war, and I thought, he'd made it up himself. And then I heard the Andrews sisters crooning it
right now
on the radio, and I realized that it was a kind of an old-fashioned idiom.
Oh, man. Our guest today, John Hildebrand, his book is titled The Heart of Things, A Midwestern Almanac. And having a lot of fun talking about our state and the Midwest. Bob in Chippewa Falls, I want to give you a chance to join in. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just have to say you bet.
You bet.
I moved here from Ohio back in the 70s from the suburb of Cleveland. And what struck me was the difference in Menominee, that's where I moved to, from the suburb I lived in, which is about the same size as far as population goes. Our high school didn't have a swimming pool. We didn't have an auditorium. We were on probation because our labs were in such bad condition, our science labs. And yet the bonding issues regularly failed. And in spite of that, two of my friends had swimming pools in their houses or at their homes. So, well, actually, a neighbor had one in their house. So it just became apparent that here in Wisconsin, people value public wealth.
You know, I think that's a great insight. And it's something I think that I've noticed, that even in small towns, there are these wonderful, rather grand public buildings. There's always been a real sense of the common good, and you see it manifested in different ways, in parks and so forth, but also in buildings. One of the pieces in the book is about Carnegie Libraries and how beautiful they are, and they're just a place set aside for everybody to use, not just the few.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Bob, so much for calling. I appreciate it. And Gary in Fitchburg, let's give you a chance as well. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I grew up on the state line between Illinois and Wisconsin, south of Monroe. I could stand in the farm field and throw a rock into Wisconsin because we lived on the state line road. One of the reasons I always revered Wisconsin was during Vietnam, a bunch of my friends were killed. And I always loved Wisconsin, Madison in particular, because of the progressive tradition of the state of Wisconsin and all the energy around that in Madison. What I noticed in recent years, I think the progressive tradition has been tarnished. I see Russ Feingold, one of the most, I would say, honest and wonderful senators, was pushed to the side. I just feel Wisconsin is heading away from its Bob La Follette traditional progressive roots, and that makes me somewhat sad and concerned about the direction of the state.
Gary, I thank you very much for calling. And John, comment from you?
Well, there's a piece in the book called Politics, and I'll just I'll just read a little piece from it, and maybe you can get a sense of where I am. Not long ago, a woman I know, my wife, drove to Madison for the day. The autumn weather being fine, she decided this was as good a time as any to walk to the state capitol, locate our local representative, and chew him out. She passed through a newly installed security checkpoint, which involved a scanner of the kind used in airports, and into the echoing rotunda, then climbed three flights of marble stairs to the legislative office. She found the representative at his desk in a double-breasted suit, festooned with lapel pins. A tall man, he rose to full height and extended his big right hand. He held the hand out for a long time, well beyond the point when it became clear she wasn't going to shake it. She moved slightly and the hand followed her. When the representative withdrew the hand and sat down, he smiled a little bit. Now, the reason she went down to chew him out was that she was tired of the, you know, kind of politics of division. And, you know, it's great for the parties. It fills the coffers, but it divides people. And it's not about the common good.
Thanks again for calling. You know, there's one other piece that I'd like you to read from. It's your essay, Vernacular, which I really think it'd be fun and interesting to have you read from that?
Well, this is a piece that starts out talking about idiom and about the way people talk. And it talks, you know, one of the things I talk about is how, you know, influenced we've been by media, and that means, you know, radio and TV and so forth. And then I switch over to this. Of course, there's no place in the country where language is off the grid. The closest I've come is a reel-to-reel tape recording made at my grandparents' Chicago apartment on Christmas Day, 1952. It was made by an uncle remembered for his big boxy recording machine, the way another uncle was known for his musical car horn. By the time I inherited it, the recording was in terrible shape. Acetate was gone in places, and some of the breaks had been spliced together with masking tape. I took it to a sound engineer who repaired the splices and made a master in his studio while I listened with headphones. At first, there's only the waterfall roar of wrapping paper being torn from presents. Then a face floats up like a balloon from time's air shaft, tied to the thin, wavering voice of Aunt Kathleen, a voice punctuated by her smoker's hack. There's no talk of the greater world, of the war in Korea, or Eisenhower's recent thumping of Stevenston. Instead, the adults drink coffee, wonder if the heat's been turned down, express false surprise at every gift my brothers and I tear into. City dwellers, they speak with the slow deliberation we associate with the country, unhurried and without inflection, as if they had all the time in the world. The person I'm waiting to hear most is absent for the first few minutes, away on some errand, until a door swings open and my father steps across the threshold of years. Sadly, his is the only voice I don't immediately recognize because I haven't heard it since I was seven. In a real sense, this is the first time I've heard him speak. Like listeners at a seance, we want the dead to speak to us directly, to say something of importance across the years. Instead, they make small talk, or in my father's case, read in all seriousness a gag gift from my brother, something called a furrow-meter. If tail is dry, fair. If tail is wet, rain. If tail is frosty, cold. If tail is gone, cyclone. Caught in the moment, the dead don't share our sense of its poignancy now that the moment is gone, which is part of their charm. Halfway through the gift opening, the tape abruptly jumps tracks to a party that evening at my other grandparents' apartment. For once, adults drown out the children with a deep, rolling swell of after-dinner chatter. The men are in shirt sleeves on the sofa, the women clearing the table. A heavy cloud of cigar smoke, tinged with lilac water, hangs in the air. Uncle Eddie sounds like a tough guy in the movies as he rues the second-hand Buick he bought instead of a Lincoln and gripes that his boss treats him like some guy to lug his grip. As the party winds down, people struggle into coats and hats, bracing themselves for the cold. But before they leave, the tape recorder uncle passes around the microphone and instructs everyone to impart a holiday greeting, something for posterity. And for whom are these greetings intended, if not ourselves, tucked safely in the future? Except for my grandfather, who does a turn as a stage Irishman, the others sign off as more or less themselves. Merry Christmas, and many more, warbles Aunt Florence. One by one, they make their farewells and slip quietly into the night until only Aunt Marcella remains. It's been a nice party, and it's time to go, she sighs, as if turning out a light.
Oh, that is a wonderful, wonderful piece. And John didn't read it all. He read but a nice share of it, part of it, and I think it gives you an idea of what you're going to find when you open his book, The Heart of Things, A Midwestern Almanac. Thank you so much for being with us, John. I hope we have a chance to do this again.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. John Hildebrand is author of The Heart of Things, A Midwestern Almanac. And I'm telling you, it is a... it's a wonderful read, and I hope you have a chance to get a look at it. And I think he writes a lot about the environment in his book, and I think a lot of us have a real appreciation for the environment. We're committed to protecting it. For Native Americans, there's an even stronger cultural and historical bond than most of us understand. And we're going to talk about that next with our author, Patty Lowe, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.